You're listening to DraftKings Network.
All right, so I'm excited to talk to this guy because I've got a lot of questions for him, and he has jumped into a conversation, best pound for pound, to do it in mixed martial arts. I really love the mixed martial arts, even though I don't love a lot about what happens underneath the underbelly of the mixed martial arts, because he's one of the few guys who is paid correctly because he draws audience, and he had that big knockout of our guy in Miami, Jorge Masvidal, who was our guy until he wasn't our guy, and Stugatz was his guy, and yeah. Stugatz still wants to be his guy,
right,
and go to the octagon with him, but
I could be the champs guy. I mean, that's...
Okay, you're going to angle for... Okay, you, wow. You're
I'm
gonna,
available.
Really? You're going to just go...
Just bandwagon.
Oh,
jumping.
My God. Yeah, well. You're really willing to do that, Stugatz. You're willing to go to the octagon now with him instead? You're going to do that? You're going to jump straight from Masvidal to him like that? You whore.
I mean, well, what's surprising about that?
Nothing, actually. All right, so we once asked famously George St. Pierre to see how long it would take him to kill Stugatz, but he couldn't see Stugatz, so he had a lot of follow-up questions. Let's play that sound for Kamaru.
George, how quickly could you kill me if you wanted to?
I don't know. Depends of you. Are you do you have a weapon on your so maybe you can kill me faster, you know?
No, I have no weapon, you just...
Nobody is faster than a bullet, my friend.
Okay, but take the gun and the weapon out of it. I have no weapon. You just decide you don't like me and you want to kill me.
No, he's got a pool cue. He's got... Let's give him a pool cue. How quickly can you kill him?
Yeah, do you have any sharp object near you?
No, just a billiard cue. All he's got is one...
I'm sure you have a pen.
No pens.
A pen. Okay. Okay, we've got a pool stick and we've got a pen. How quickly could you kill him?
I believe it could take me less than 30 seconds.
Thank you, George.
All right, so we've got our answer now. Now you can see him, though. You can see him. How long do you think, if the task was you have to kill him, how long would it take?
See, I could see him,
yeah,
but I don't necessarily know. The dimensions aren't there. I don't necessarily know how big he is.
Right.
Now, are you 6'4", 250 pounds? Or are you about normal size, about 5'10", 170 pounds?
In fighting terms, he qualifies as a heavyweight, but in height size, he's more of a flyweight.
So he's 5'6" or so. And a
you want me to stand up so you can see all of it?
You're in a Zoom screen. He's 5'5", maybe.
5'5", and a jiggly. He's 48 years old and jiggly. So now quit asking follow-up questions.
I would say, honestly, 25 seconds.
Probably. Wow.
New record.
What would be your preferred means of death? Like, how would you go about it?
Of death? I would say I wouldn't want it to be extremely painful. I would say by choking him, strangling him, and just cutting off the blood and the oxygen to the brain, and then kind of holding him for quite a bit and let him just lollygag away slowly.
Oh, it's very kind of you. You're a kind man. I mean, you are.
I am.
No, you're not. I mean, he is in one realm, I suppose he is. But what he did to your guy...
He just put me to sleep.
He did to your guy, though, was cruel. The internet laughed at him. That had to be something that felt very cool, given that he had specifically, publicly questioned your punching power.
Yeah. You know, that's the weird thing about me, and I think that's what separates me from a lot of different guys. Is before fights, these guys talk and these guys say whatever they want to say, what they think they're going to do, And it upsets me. It upsets me and it puts me into the zone to where it elevates me. To my senses are heightened each and every time we get in there. And then of course, I plot all the things that I want to do because of course he made a bunch of comments, made a bunch of statements, a bunch of sound bites of what he was going to doing this and that. He was going to baptize me, do this, do that. And my mind before the fight just said, after I finish this guy, I'm going to post every single thing he said and rub it in his face. But the one thing about me, and I've been saying that now for almost, 14 fights in a row in the UFC, I'm not that guy. When it's all said and done, I leave it in there and I walk away from it. And I would much rather be friends with those guys that I fought. I would much rather be friends with them. And so, yeah, of course, it felt good to go out there and really achieve that after he himself and his followers said that I couldn't do it. It felt great, but after all of that, yes, of course, I watched some of the fans, all the memes and the things they put up. Some of them were pretty funny, I'm not gonna lie. But I don't, for me, I don't take any pride and joy in seeing that.
Such a kind man, gentleman. Was that the best feeling you've had as a professional fighter?
No, no.
What was?
The best feeling was bringing my daughter inside the cage after I became the world champion in 2019. That was the crazy thing. The reason it felt that way is because I had dreamt about it, and in my mind, I'd plot about it over and over, and I'm like, oh man, this would be cool if this actually happened. This would be cool. And I had no idea that it actually would happen. And then once it was happening, it was like deja vu. It was like an out-of-body experience. Like deja, I'm watching this happen, and I'm going through it. I'm like, oh shit, this is really happening. So that, I think that would probably be the best moment that I've
had. That's interesting. That's awesome. That you would go that softy on love, because Stugatz wants you to be the cruel guy who enjoys the internet laughing, because like the people were joking. I mean, you turned a guy who had never been knocked out, right, into an internet meme where he had a solar system of sweat around. No, but this is what happened. And the photographs of him kissing his chin because of how you hit him. Stugatz wants you to stunt on him. He wants you to brag about it.
It was a perfect connection. I mean, it had to feel fantastic. Plus, you have a guy who every time you try to punch him in the face, he laughs at you. So then you connected in that way, and that had to feel amazing.
Oh, that was the other thing. That, yes. 10 seconds earlier, he had smiled because you didn't have punching power.
Yeah, absolutely. For that, yes, it was great. And when I see that picture over it, the only thing I can think about there's this video, this meme of Seth Rogen. He's in front of, I think, a camera with a fan blown, and he's kind of making this face like this. It's kind of, you know, this model-esque face. And I every time I see that picture of Masvidal, I think he's just kind of doing this model face while he's about to go to sleep, unconscious. And it felt good, honestly, because I knew what I possessed. And these guys, they try to trick the masses and trick the media and thinking, yeah, they're that guy. Instead of just, I'm a guy who I'll be quiet and I'll do the work. But when we step out there, I'm a completely different person. I'm not this guy you see right now. This is not the guy that steps in that octagon. When I cross that threshold, that barrier to go inside that cage, it's a completely different guy. And that guy might be able to kill you in about 15 seconds.
Oh, 15 seconds. Wow. He's upgraded.
That guy might do it in 15.
That guy, okay, this guy can only do it 25 seconds.
This guy's 25.
That guy is going to be crueler about things. And so what does it have anything to do with your daughter, the fact that you didn't go on the victory lap, embarrassing him yet more by doing, you know, everything that he said? Or like, what are you trying to do there? Why show the restraint of not gloating?
Partially because of my daughter, absolutely. But also because I learned something very early when I started competing in sports. When I was in middle school and I scored a touchdown, of course, you watch all these videos of NFL players doing the celebration dances and stuff like that. And I'm thinking, what's the coolest shit that I can do right now? And I'm trying to think of something to do. And I remember going back to the sideline and my coach goes, act like you've been there before. Don't go in there and act like a jackass in the end zone. Act like you've been there before. Because if you truly believe you're going to score plenty of touchdowns and you're going to be great at this, then that shouldn't be a surprise to you. For you to gloat like that and do all this extra things, then you're letting the world know that was accidental. Like, you shouldn't be there. And that's something that stuck with me forever, to the point where it's almost a little too much now, because I don't really even get to enjoy or stun as much as I want to after these victories. I mean, the clown before, the one with the MAGA hat before the Masvidal, was that one I should have stunned on. I mean, definitely. He had everything coming. And still, after the fight, I really couldn't, because that just wasn't in me.
Well, why him, though? Why Covington? You didn't refer to him by what happened? By name, you didn't refer to him. But yeah, but you did. Yes, you harmed him.
Yes, we're not going to refer to him by name, because he doesn't deserve for us to refer to him by name. This is a guy that like Masvidal, this guy said he was going to leave me on a stretcher. I remember that vividly in a press conference. He said, I'm going to leave you in a pool of your own blood, and they're going to have to carry you out on a stretcher. He said this. And how ironic was it that there's a picture of him on his knees after he's trying to make his way up after being finished, face covered in blood, blood dripping from his face. And yeah, he had to run out of that arena after being finished. So that one felt good. That one felt really good because that wasn't just for me. I felt like that one was for the world, especially in the time that we were in and what was going on in the world. That one I felt like I went out there and did justice for the world.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
I don't believe I've heard you talk about being a single dad or the difficulties with that or the love that has spawned in you or where it's changed you and softened you. What has that been, being a single dad for you? And you keep, like, you've had two of those moments that had to have feel for the ego of an athlete, for the vanity of an athlete, the world behind you. Yes, I embarrassed a dude who was trying to embarrass me, and I did it with grace. And you're saying, but no, that wasn't as cool as winning the title and the specifics of my daughter being with me.
Before my daughter, I was hard-nosed. No, I got to train. I got to do this. I got to do that. No, I'm not going out. I'm not partying. I got to train. To where it was almost like I was almost emotionless at certain times, because all I really cared about was trying to be a better athlete. And I was living with Rashad. When I started my career, I was living with Sugar Rashad Evans, one of the greatest to do it. And Rashad would tell me, come on, let's it's Friday night. Let's go out. Let's go get some pizza or something. Let's go hang out. I'm like, nah, man, I got to train in the morning. Nah, man. And Rashad would tell me, bro, you need balance. You got to do this. You got to have a little bit of fun while you do this as well. And I was like, nah, man, you go ahead. I'm good. To the point where I almost kind of became numb to the outside world. Now, when my daughter came along, it was like, you know, I'm an athlete, and if I maybe hit my leg or stub my toe, I'm like, walk it off. Get tough, walk it off. That's how it always was. Now with my daughter, I had to get cuddly and cute and pick her up and hold her, and she broke a certain side of me that elevated me in a sense, like to where now I'm in tune with my emotions a lot more. And I mean, so damn in tune with my emotions. Sometimes I cry on planes when I'm watching movies. Don't tell anyone this, but I'm on a plane and I'm watching a movie, and it was just a movie about a dad losing a father losing his wife and having to raise a child alone. And I'm on the plane, and there's a older lady next to me in the seat next to me, and I'm watching the movie, and the part comes on, it just hits me, and tears are rolling down my eyes. I'm like, no, don't blink. You can't cry here. She might watch. You can't cry here. And, you know, certain times like that. Now I'm like, oh my God, how the hell did I get so soft? Like, I'm a killer. Why am I so soft right now? So just having those moments, I know what my daughter's done for me in my life, and I appreciate it. But by no means does that take me away from the killer that I need to be when I step inside that octagon.
All right, but let me back you off just one more time, Killer, and ask you again to paint the picture for us of her coming into the octagon, sort of why it is that that moment meant, because I want to ask you about your dad. Your dad put the belt on you, and that had to feel emotional as well.
He was done killing, Dan. He was enjoying the moment with his daughter. I mean.
Yeah, Dan, I was done killing. Come on. It was, the thing with my daughter is my daughter has this ability to flip a certain switch in me. And when I flip a switch on where I'm the Nigerian nightmare, my daughter has the ability to just walk up and turn it off. And I can't do anything about it. And I truly realized this in 2019 when I was about to fight for the title, Tyron Woodley, when she came to her first ever competition, where it was the fight day. And we're in the mornings where, you know, I try to have breakfast with my immediate family in the mornings, just, you know, my last time seeing them before I go to battle. And my daughter's there. My daughter, she's always on me. We've been together, you know, every day for the first, like, really 3 years of her life. We were together every day because she went to the gym with me. And so she's on me in the morning, and I'm in the zone. I'm already, like, starting to cave in to this killer zone to go out there and compete. And she's sitting next to me at breakfast. She's got her feet on me. She's eating. I'm feeding her. And I'm mentally, I'm trying to stay in that zone. But she starts touching my face. And she'll, like, she's trying to be sweet. Just things women do. Like, just, you know, showing love, her affection. She's touching me. She's trying to be on me. She's laying on me. And she's touching my face, rubbing my face. And I'm just, like, feel myself. It's like an aggressive lion and you're taming it. And I just feel myself kind of dwindling down. And I'm just like, oh no, I can't go there. I'm about to, in less than 10 hours, I'm about to do something very violent. And I can't go there. So I literally had to get up and say, all right, guys, I'm going to cut it short. I will see you guys later. And I had to walk away because I knew what she was doing to me. And she has that ability. So even this time, she walked in the cage right after I was done. I didn't even see her walk in. But after I was done, of course, the you know, all that adrenaline and testosterone is just pouring out of me. And I'm just, I don't remember what I did. I can't remember. I can't tell you what I did after that. I remember at one point I was on top of the cage and then outside and then inside. I don't know what I did in between. But I just know I'm walking around and I'm feeling like King Kong. And I look over, she's there, and just whoop, switch off. I just cave in, and I'm just like, oh, and I grab her and I'm kissing her. She has the ability to do that, which is, as an athlete, as a killer, I don't necessarily like it. But as a father, I absolutely love it because she's able to bring me back to reality.
What a beautiful symbolism for you, though, to have worked all your life for that moment, and so much so that you black out in the emotion of it because you know what it took. Nobody knows what it took the way you know what it took to get on top of that cage. You don't even remember it, and you're in such an emotional state because you're the testosterone vanity king of mixed martial arts, gotten to the top of your dreams, and she's the only one in the world who can do that, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I not even my mom, because I think even if my mom had walked in, I think I would still be turned up. And my mom, it would take a lot for my mom to calm me down, because I don't know, I fought my brothers for years and my mom can calm us down, you know, but my daughter she just flips that switch and there's nothing I can do about it.
What happened with your father? What's the backstory there on the emotions of him putting the belt on you?
I actually put that belt on him because My dad was incarcerated for a little over 10 years. It was a case that, you know, I've spoken about. It's on online. People can, you know, see the story, that documentary that was done on there. But he, after 10 years of not seeing my father, it was not just not seeing him. I got a chance. Every time I could, I went down to Texas to visit him, but it was having him not be home, having him not be present for all of my mixed martial arts career was very, it was hard for me. But it was one of those things that I channeled and used it as motivation in order for me to be successful. It was motivation for me to go step inside that octagon, knowing that my father was watching and knowing that all his people that were around him at that point would be watching as well. Knowing damn well, I got to make daddy proud or they might make fun of him all that week. And, you know, I just used it as motivation, and I can only imagine how hard it was for him to watch me become the champion of the world and him not being present. And so when my dad finally came home, that was something that was extremely emotional for me to be able to put that belt on him, because he went and sat down for almost 10 and a half years, championed through that, and was still able to make it home to his family. It's something very big, and I think about it, and it just touches me deeply. And I'm just thankful. I'm so thankful and blessed too, because that title, it's not promised. You can lose that title any given moment with any given opponent. And to still be blessed to be the champion when my dad came home, it was very, very emotional, something that I would cherish forever.
People are talking about you as best pound for pound. Do you say that? Do you believe that you are a better pound for pound fighter than John Jones?
As an athlete right now, absolutely. I'm my biggest fan, and I am my biggest critic. Absolutely. Any athlete that doesn't understand that, then something's missing. I think right now, yes, I am the pound for pound best fighter in the world. It's not. Now you're talking about career, overall body of work. I'm a realist and I am honest, and I would tell you that I think John Jones for sure is the best pound for pound because of what he has done throughout his career to legends, that way he has done it. You have to give him that respect. But I'm not done yet. But right now on the planet, I am the best pound for pound.
Francis Ngannou was in your corner for your last fight, and you guys are now considered dominant champions, yet in your mid-30s, you've made this leap that you don't necessarily see with guys that have been considered dominant champions. What sets you two guys apart?
I think it's our ability to work, which goes back to how we came up, seeing the things that we have seen and enduring and going through those things. Like Francis, I don't know if you guys even know his story. Even when I think about his story, it makes me want to cry thinking about where he's at now and what he has gone through. It's something that motivates me to this day. Every time I think about what he's been through, I feel like I'm not going hard enough. I'm like, I got to go harder. And I think that is something that propels us each and every day, because we're going to have those moments where we're tired of training. We don't really want to train. We get up, our body's sore, body hurts, and we don't want to go today. And it's very easy to say, you know what? I'm going to take the day off. My body hurts. I'm going to take the day off. But I think those moments and knowing what we have come through gives us that added and extra oomph to just say, you know what, I'm going to take my ass to the gym because I got to get it. And I think that is something that propels us to why we're still able to succeed, compete, and succeed at the level that we're doing it at. But Francis is one bad mother, you know what.
Are you willing to threaten Dana White on behalf of all of us to get the John Jones and Ngannou fight done, like, so that we can all watch this? Pay the men correctly. Are you willing to advocate for this?
Absolutely. I think that is at the end of the day, I am a fan of the sport as well. I'm extremely fan of the sport. To even little guys like the flyweights, I watch as much as I could. I watch them all. I know guys who don't even think I know them. And yes, I'm a fan of the sport. And as a fan of the sport, I think the biggest fight that people want to see right now is Francis Ngannou versus John Jones, headline UFC Africa. What you think?
You've been sitting on that idea for a while. It has not been lost on people that, yes, that region is kicking some ass all over the place, all over the sport, in the sport where everyone wants to be the biggest of the kickassers.
Yes. Obviously, that's the political side that's going to go into this. I think this is a fight that they obviously want to have in Vegas because of, you know, obviously gate and things of that nature. But this is such a humongous, monumental fight. Like, let's just be honest. Why not break ground? Why not have it? The first ever event in Africa. I think this is something that would be remembered forever.
How do you feel about how Dana pays the fighters?
It could be better. Let's be honest. It could be better. When you really look at how things are broken down, yeah, it could absolutely be better. But at the same time, you have to, and I, as an athlete, and this is me as a UFC fighter, I understand all of the different layers that Dana compresses for us so we don't have to go through. When boxers have to pay promoter, you have to pay your manager, you have to pay your trainer, you have to pay this person and this person. It's the money has to trickle down through so many hands before it actually gets to your hand. And which is why Floyd has done what he's done. Floyd cut out all those middlemen, which is why he took off the way he did. And Dana White does that for us. He compresses all of that for us, to which we are definitely grateful. But yeah, it could be more. If he was paying me $100 million, guess what? I'm a $150 million. That's absolutely true. It can be more. And there's no such thing as too much.
You got that right. By the way, your high school coach seems like my kind of guy because he struggled. Well, he struggled with your first name when you were in high school, so he just called you Marty?
Yeah, he just looked. And I mean, I'm 5'2", 103-pound kid and thought I was hot shit, thought I was cool. And this guy walks down the stairs. It's this former Marine. He's got the same buzz haircut, straight up haircut, big, broad shoulders. And he looks at me, he's talking to me. And of course I'm intimidated. And he goes, who is Kamaru? I can't say that. I walk up and I'm like, that's me, coach. And he looks at me, he's like, well, there's no way I'm going to say that shit. You know, I'm going to call you Marty. Yes, coach. Yeah, that's fine. And he starts that trend and it just fizzles and trickles down to where it bleeds over to college and bled over to a little bit to the world of mixed martial arts, to where, and it's funny, they tried to make fun of me with that. They thought it was a joke thing and something that I hated, and they tried to make fun of me about it. And the thing is, you guys wouldn't know the name if I wasn't good at what I was doing. And so everyone thought it was something that they were making fun of, but at the same time, it's like, guys, yeah, that means I was good enough to where you guys know the name, so I'm glad you know the name.
I admire you so much for a number of different reasons. Fighters, the bravery, the courage it takes to get stripped down to your vulnerability and fight other people for money. And to make it an art, I really respect what you do. And what I love talking to fighters about, who are the most introspective, is about their relationship with fear, because a lot of guys like to stick their chest out and say, I don't fear anybody. But George St. Pierre was on with us recently and was saying, no, that's all a mask. And so I was just curious what your relationship with fear is.
It's a roller coaster relationship. You know, some days we're cool, but most days we're not. And there's certainly, and I talk about this with my coaches and some of the people that I consider mentors, because sometimes it gets too much. It gets to be too much to where you start losing your mind on it. And for me, I have to go to those sources of people who have done it, people who have gone through it successfully, and ask them for their advice on how to go through it. But fear is something that you can't run away from. It's there. You just, when you sign up to do something like we do, you cannot run away from that. And you get extremely, extremely scared and afraid because you are willingly walking into danger. That's not something that most people volunteer to do. You know, what happens if you heard a gunshot, you were gonna run the opposite way. You know, it's very rare that people hear something like that and say, okay, I'm gonna go into the fire. And that's something that we have to train ourselves to do. So yeah, I'm scared. When you first sign to fight somebody, it's okay, yeah, you're gonna train, it's all good, yeah, yeah. But then you start getting closer and closer to that performance, that fight, then your mind starts playing tricks on you. You start thinking about every possible way that you could lose, every possible way that you could be embarrassed, which if you don't think about it and if you don't fear it, then you're lying to yourself. And that was part of the reason why that Masvidal fight was so personal to me, because he was saying, oh, this guy has no punching power. This guy can't hurt me. This guy can't hurt a fly. This guy can't do that. And that's very wrong, because we're all afraid. And if you're saying that you're not afraid, then you've done something wrong. That fear keeps you safe in there. And the way that I control it is when I go into, especially fight day, when I'm walking into that octagon, you have to see my walkouts. I'm dancing. I've got a smile through it because I'm nervous. I've dreamt of every possible way of being finished by this guy and every possible way that this guy could hurt me and embarrass me in front of my family, in front of the world, in front of my daughter. And I'm just like, bring that shit on, mother. I'm like, bring it on. I'm walking towards it. And my confidence grows each and every time as I step towards it, because I know it's very, very dangerous. I know that I'm afraid, but I'm going to walk towards it, because just like bullies, sometimes you got to hit a bully right in the mouth for that bully to say, okay, I respect you. I'll stop bullying you. Same thing with that fear. Once I cross into that cage, they better fear me, because now I'm the bully. I'm the king in there. And that's just kind of how my mind works, how I try to control, process, and I hone all that fear, and I use it when I'm in there.
Do you work with sports psychologists on this front, or just mentors and people who have been there, because sports psychologists have not been there?
I don't. Right now, I don't. Have I seen a sports psychologist? Yes. When I was first training for the Olympics in 2011, I definitely saw a sports psych, because I was in a place mentally to where I didn't feel like I was worthy of competing with certain people. And the sports psych, yes, of course, they gave me exercises and things of that nature that could help, but it's tough. It is really tough. That's a good point that you bring up. It's tough to take on those when your sports psychologist is this 150-pound chubby guy who have never really, probably doesn't ride a bike. And I'm not saying that they're not brilliant and good at what they do. They have some absolutely are. But it's just, I'm one of those visual person to where I respect you if I've seen you do this. If I've seen you accomplish what I'm trying to accomplish, I respect that, because I know you've done it. I know you feel the same emotions that I'm feeling. It's very easy to tell someone, block out the pain and run through that wall, when you've not blocked out the pain and ran through that wall and felt what that wall feels like when you run through it. And so, yeah, right now I have friends that have done it, have been at the top of the sport, understand it, know how to deal with certain emotions and certain things. And I try to lean on them and get the perspective so I can make my own assessment from all that information that I receive.
How long were you Marty?
I was Marty in high school from 2002 to 2005, and then I became Marty in Iowa from 2005 to 2007, and then from 2007 to 2010 I was Marty from Nebraska. Now that's the bad Marty.
So there
Marty
it is.
From Nebraska. He's totally a bad dude.
He is not the best pound for pound fighter in the world. If he's Marty Usman,
it's a totally different story. Yes, it's a totally different story.
No, but it can't be pound right. Marty Usman is not the best pound for pound fighter in the world. I'm sorry, he cannot be. He's not allowed to be.
No. But Marty from Nebraska was a bad dude, though. On a wrestling mat, Marty from Nebraska was a bad dude. He was a bad dude.
Well, that's the part of the fight that was interesting to me. Afterward, was Masvidal saying, well, I prepared for 25 minutes of wrestling. Like, that's what I was preparing for. Like, you decided before the fight, no, I'm not going to wrestle. I'm going to knock. I am intent on doing it this way.
Absolutely. Yeah. He came to meet Marty from Nebraska, and Marty from Nebraska didn't show up. Kamaru Usman from Auchi, Nigeria, with hands of steel showed up to that fight.
Thank you for being on with us, Marty from Nebraska.
See you, Marty.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.